Today on the podcast, we're actually going to jump into a topic that for many years was taboo, that no one would ever speak of. And it seems like today it's becoming more and more acceptable, not just in the music space, but in life. But we're talking about mental health. And Daniel McCartney is here with me. He's from the Continuance Foundation. And Daniel's got a real interesting story because not only does he work in the industry, so he sees it from that aspect, but he's also a musician. You know, it's like he's got experience from kind of both sides. So introduce yourself a little bit and then let's just have a conversation on this.
Yeah, man. Well, first off, thanks for having me. And again, like, you know, the mental health space is very driven on advocacy, right? And so you kind of realize really quickly how important this kind of stuff is. Like, just getting on, you know, we have this series called Conversations About Mental Health, and it's literally just like an Instagram live series where we talk about mental health, right? And we do all the podcasts, we do all this stuff, we do a ton of mental health content, and it's just, it's huge, man. So like, you know, even just opening up your platform for a discussion that's a little different is super, super great. And yeah, man, I was in a band for 8 years and toured full time. And I actually left the band in 2015 to become an agent. And well, you know, I went to be an assistant.
The hardest working people, by the way, in the industry are the assistants to an agent. Oh, I yes. told someone, I said, if I want to go find someone, like when I was a manager, I said, if I want to find a day-to-day person that can handle anything that's thrown their way, go get the assistant to the agent at an agency.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's bar none, like one of the most brutal jobs you can have. Like, it's really intense. And so I did that for 3 years. I was working for like Papa Roach and A Day to Remember and like rock bands. And then I worked for Cheryl, who had Post Malone and 21 Savage. And then I got promoted. And yeah, I've been building my roster ever since, you know. And kind of part of that, I think, is like, you know, when you become an agent, you get a little bit more freedom to like be yourself and tell your story. And so I started the Continuance Foundation, like peak COVID, which, you know, a lot of people questioned. I think, you know, why would you do that during a pandemic? Like, this is going to be so difficult to get off the ground. You can't do your public fundraising events and stuff like that. And for me, I was like, man, it's more needed than ever. Like, you know, people, all these musicians went from touring full time and recording full time, and then it just stopped, you know, and they were sitting at home staring at the wall. So it was actually a great time to start it. And we're doing a ton of great work. I know you met Brittany over email. She's amazing. And yeah, it's all things mental health in the music industry, you know, both for the industry and for the artists. And yeah, man, I'm just thrilled to.
It's interesting because coming from both sides, from working with major artists to working at major labels and now, you know, helping independent artists, the struggle is real. And I tell artists, I said, listen, I said, here's the part that sucks about this business that you want to be in is that your rewards are not in direct proportion to the work that you put in.
Correct. And in
most businesses, you work an hour, you get paid for that hour. You do a job, you get paid for that job. There's so much that's out of the artist's control. You can do everything right and still get dropped. And yep. That's what was really struggling for me after leaving Taylor Swift in 2008. I consulted Sony, Big Machine Records, and it's like I had a couple other artists that got signed. As I'm like, okay, wait, you showed up every place they told you to show up. You recorded the songs that they told you to record. They determined the order of the release of the songs. They determined the marketing of the songs, and the song didn't work, and you're the one that gets fired.
Mm-hmm.
Let's think about that for a second. Or the artist is sitting there never knowing what's going on. That's when this mind starts to wander. Am I good enough? Did I make the right decision? What can I do better? And that's where, you know, all of a sudden they start reaching for outside sources to kind of comfort that thing that they're having, to try to numb it. And that's where the drugs come in, and that's where the alcohol comes in, and that's where the making bad decisions come in. And it's great now that people are able to talk about it. It's great now that Lewis Capaldi can have the conversation that he's having right now based off of not only mental illness, but physical illness as well, because it used to be as you can't say anything for the guys and the girls. You always have to be single. If you date someone, you can't tell them you're dating someone. You can't show them this side of your life. It will drive someone to that point of breaking.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the pressure that artists have is pretty, it's pretty unparalleled. Like, you know, and I talked about this on another podcast once, but the best way I can explain it is like an artist can say as much as they want, like, I'm doing this for myself and, you know, I'm releasing this stuff and like, I don't care about how it's received. I don't, you know, I just want to do my thing. And I think that that's a great mentality, but in order for you to have a career and do it for a living, you need people to consume what you're doing. So I think what we find is like, there's so much pressure because these artists are creating, they're creating their art so that other people can decide if they like it or not. Right. And that's like a crazy concept. Like it's a wild concept. It's like commercially, other people have to like it. Even if that other person isn't educated on music, has no idea what they're doing,
is like, not a fan of your style of music,
not a fan of your style, whatever. It's still like in their hands for you to have a living. So the pressure just, because I think what happens is you get into a spot where you're just trying so hard to make something work, whether it's natural for you or it's not, you just want to do it as a career and be able to live. And so, man, the pressure is it's serious, and it will send a lot of these artists into dark places.
Well, and it's also too where I think that they lose contact with who they are, who their audience is. It's like they're seeking validation from the wrong people. They're asking the wrong advice from the wrong people. And it's like when you go find your audience, and I don't care if you're signed to a label or if you're not signed to a label, find your people. Everyone, by the way, news to self, everyone is not going to like you and your music. It's just impossible. Right. Not everyone likes Mexican food. Not everyone likes pizza. You know, it's like not everyone. Yep. So stop trying to please everyone. Find the true believers in what it is that you're doing. And be okay knowing that this is, I always say we're in a business of next. Achieve this, what's next? Achieve this, what's next? It's like too often independent artists or artists that just get signed all of a sudden think that the next stop's the Grammys. Right. And that's not it. You know, it's like be okay playing those 100-seat rooms for a year. Be okay playing, you know, going on radio tour for 6 months and never getting on a bus. It's like they have this big grandiose idea of what the industry really is, and they forget why they started making music in the first place.
Yep.
That's where I'm always trying to bring them back. It's like, look, it's got to be about the music. And because we are selling emotions, the impact that your music has on others. But sometimes I think they get so caught up, and coming from the artist, why do you think that is? Why do you think that they just can't be okay with their 30 fans to start with, and then their 300 fans, and then their 3,000 fans? They automatically think they're Beyonce.
Yeah. I think the answer is probably different for everyone. I think some artists, you know, it's as simple as like being able to have a fan base big enough to have a living. Some it's, you know, I mean, look, there are a lot, I mean, you know, I've obviously am full support of the artists, but there are a lot of artists that are in it for the wrong reasons. And that usually shines pretty quickly. If it's just a clout thing, or they just want to be famous or whatever, usually that reveals itself pretty quickly, because the second that it requires real work, you lose them for the most part.
Right.
But yeah, look, I think it's like, you know, it's definitely a business of public achievement, which I think is tough, right? Like even in the industry, like artists aside, like agents, labels, managers, A&Rs, it's the same thing, because you have, you know, top 40, under 40, you know, you've got all this stuff. And you kind of sometimes feel like if you don't get that stuff, like, oh, you know, maybe you're not successful, but I know some rich motherfuckers who never got any of that stuff, you know? And, yeah. And I think it's all perspective, I think, is the biggest thing that I always try to say. It's like, there are so many artists that you and I could sit here and probably be like, I've never heard of that artist,
right?
But they make $1 million a year. And
that was my buddy Jelly Roll until recent. Nobody knew who exactly. Jelly Roll was.
Yeah. And Jelly was grinding it out. But the great thing about Jelly was, is, you know, he's so big now, but even before then, like, he had a career, you know,
no, he was making $200,000 to $300,000 a month before he got his record deal.
Exactly.
You know, he had 1 million monthly listeners with an average of 6 to 7 streams a day per monthly listener. And mm-hmm. Matt Wallace, his old manager, you know, we were talking, and Jelly belongs to the same country club I do, right up the street. And he's been following my social media stuff for years, but it was like, there's multi-millionaire independent artists that no one's ever heard of because mm-hmm. they, one, didn't fight technology, two, didn't wait for someone to validate them. And more important is they found an audience and served that audience.
Yeah.
And you, if it's like everybody wants the label, and I said, look, the labels today, managers, agents like yourself, you are no longer in the small business startup. You're yeah. more in the acquire small businesses that are working. And correct. You don't have to be working at the $1 million level, but you have to see something because your roster can only be so big. And it's the same with labels. Their roster can only be so big. A manager can only physically be with so many people. You can only make so many calls a day on behalf of a certain number of artists. So I'm always like, make yourself the best small business worth investing in. It's like, let them see that something's already working. So when did you decide, and what gave you the idea to start the Continuance Foundation?
It was so easy for me, man. I mean, this was 2020, and I thought to myself, I'm in a good place mentally. I want to create something that I wish that I would have had when I was a musician, right? That was so simple. So there was no model. There was no business plan. I just started up this thing, started up a brand, and started helping people, and started making mental health content, started raising money so that musicians could go to therapy, because a lot of musicians don't have health insurance. And sure. even if they do, it doesn't always cover therapy, you know? And we just dove right in, man. It was so cool because we started to attract these different people. And then we got these advocates. And then I met Jeff from the Smashing Pumpkins, and he became a huge advocate. And then, you know, I met Aaron from Under Oath, and I like all of our relationships started to kind of grow. Because I think what happens is when you're in a rough spot and someone gives you help, and then you give it some time and they start to feel better, they want to tell other people about it.
Absolutely.
They want to see... you start to get to where you really want to advocate for the cause that helped you better yourself. So, and it's like clockwork every time almost. It's like, you know, we'll get people into our programs, and then in 6 months they're asking, hey, can I come on a podcast, or can you find me this opportunity?
Sure.
And it's a good feeling, you know? So, it was just a no-brainer. I just started it up. I didn't have a consultant. I just dove right in and said, all right, you know, what are some cool things that like would have been awesome for me to have when I was on tour, when I was in the studio constantly? And so we developed these, you know, like I said, therapy was a big part of it. We developed these free content. So mindfulness sessions, meditation sessions, the conversations about mental health series is really big for us. And I also developed a webinar for corporate companies to go in and educate the staff on mental health. So we did that with our first customer was Primary Wave. We went in and had, you know, 80 of their staff listen to us. We did it at UTA.
Sure.
UTA was the first talent agency to ever have support groups for their employees. That was something that we provided for them. Yeah, man, just dove right in, and it's been so rewarding.
Yeah, it's awesome too. And once you can share from your own personal experience, you know, I've been sober over 31 years, and it was interesting because by letting people understand that there was a time, and this isn't much the case anymore because now people can talk about it. But 10 years ago, if an artist was on vocal rest, and I use the little air quotes there, they were in rehab.
Right.
And that's, you know, sorry, he's got to go on vocal rest for 3 weeks. And then by me being able to share my recovery and my sobriety, I was able to then go down and sit down with the tour manager and tell him how the bus should be set up and what triggers to look for and things like that. So it's like, if you're holding on to something and you get to that point where you're okay, people understanding it, you don't understand the amount of lives that you're able to impact. And that's what 100%. I see you doing here. You know, one of the causes that I donate to on a monthly basis is Rock to Recovery, you know, because it kind of spoke to me. I met those guys and understood exactly what was going on. If people want to reach out with you, maybe there's a therapist that's willing to donate time. Maybe there's someone that's got a check, you know, that they say, hey, what can I do? What is the best way for them to reach out to you? And what are some other areas that they might be able to support your cause if they don't have funding? Is it sharing your content that you guys post on Instagram? Tell us some ways that we can support you.
Yeah. I mean, we make it super easy because we're small. I mean, there's only a couple of us. So like, our Instagram is at continue always. We always respond to that stuff. DMs, comments, like whatever. We're very responsive on social networks. There's a contact submission form at thecontinuancefoundation.com. We always respond to that stuff, always. And look, I think for us, if someone comes to us and wants to help, you know, usually that means that it's a subject that's very dear to them, right? Sure. So our job is to help find them something tangible to do, right? So we've had therapists come in and say, hey, I'll donate an hour a week, you know, and that's just incredible. It's amazing. It goes so far. You know, we have a partnership with BetterHelp and they give us, you know, 3 months of free therapy for whoever, you know, whoever comes into the program, right? Sharing our social media content, creating content for us is always fun. Like sometimes people will just create stuff for us and send it to us and we'll be like, oh, we'll credit this.
Sure.
And we'll post it, you know? And I think just like starting to join the advocacy cause and like, you know, the more people reposting our content, the better, you know, because it has a better chance of going viral or getting picked up, and, you know, getting into the algorithm. And that stuff's amazing. So we always have like something tangible for people to do if they reach out to us. And again, Brittany, who I have at the nonprofit, is just amazing with that stuff.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people don't know how to help, but there's always things that you can do. I shared this when COVID started, artists, you know, were freaking out and didn't quite know what to do. So I shot a video because I knew they wouldn't know how to do it, but I did it. I shot a video going, how can you help your favorite artist during COVID? And right. I explained, I said, well, let me tell you how you can do this. It's like, if you can't afford to go stream, you know, it's like, I said, the sad part is I said, those songs that you're telling everyone how much you love and you dance to at your wedding or you hooked up with your first time or whatever, they pay for those. They're independent artists. They fund that whole entire operation. And the part that really sucks is those jobs that they had to fund them, the Uber drivers, the baristas, the waiters, the bouncers, those jobs went away when COVID went away. So I said, you know, if they have a merch store, go buy a couple t-shirts. You know, if they're going live and they throw up a virtual tip jar, throw them a couple extra bucks. Every little bit helps. I said, but they don't quite know how to ask for help sometimes. That's like the hardest thing for an artist. So I was teasing. I said, I went into ChatGPT and I teach that a lot in the independent space. I said, how to talk to my audience without sounding needy, asking them for help in my, and it says, certainly. It just lists like 10 things that you can do. And it's like the key is, and the reason that I'm talking about this is that we don't know you have a problem if you don't talk to someone. You don't necessarily have to talk to me, but you listening to this podcast, most of you are musicians. Most of you know musicians. We can't help you if you're always good. Yeah. We can't help you if you're afraid that, well, I don't want to bother you, it's going to be more of a bother for me to attend your funeral than it is for me to try to help find you help. So you need to get out of your own way sometimes, because you're causing yourself unneeded burden. You're causing yourself problems that you don't need to go through alone. And now having organizations like this, I mean, I'm in my 280th something podcast, and this is the first time that I've ever been approached with someone like you. That's why when Brittany reached out, I'm like, dude, this is a no-brainer. This was easy.
Yeah.
You know, this one's easy. And it's sad that I haven't heard about it beforehand. Now I'm kind of pissed.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to do, right? Is like make that to where, you know, every 10 people that reach out, one of them is a mental health person. Like that, we're trying to get it there. And I think we made a lot of progress as like an industry, but it's still, I mean, look, if you're a podcast host, and you know, you're trying to find a way to make this podcast work and have a ton of content out, and you know, doing the whole creating a business out of it, the sexy subjects obviously the first ones that are gonna come up, right? And that's just natural and organic, because you have to have a listenership, you know, you have to have people that are listening. So the biggest thing I think is like identifying people like you who will actually be like, oh, this is really important. Let's sneak this in.
Well, and I think that's the whole point.
Let's sneak this in and have one mental health episode this week. And then.
Well, and it's not like we even need to sneak it in. It's like, you know, I'm sitting on an email list of 78,000 people. You know, I've got an Instagram following of 50,000 people. I got a Twitter following of 50,000 people. So it's like, the more we can get content like this out there, the more that we can share it, the right person will find it. You know, when I go on stage, I'll tell people, I say, you know, I'll let them know right away, you know, before I get started, let me just say this, you know, I'm 31 years sober, and I don't say that for applause. I say it for two reasons. One, your past does not define your future. I'm living proof of that. Second is, if you've got someone in your life, or you or someone, you know, struggling, don't give up on them yet, because you never know what the outcome might be. I said, now, do I lead with that with my social media? No. Do I lead with that when my webinar training start? No. But I always bring it up, because I never know who's listening. A lot of people will judge you, you know, if you started that way. But it's like, when it's right in the conversation, when it makes sense, what are some signs? And we'll end with this. What are some signs that someone who knows a musician might look for to say, you know what, they might need some help, or maybe I should ask them if they're okay? Is there anything? I threw that on you last minute, but is there?
No, that's okay. One of the obvious ones is fatigue, right? Like it's something that you can kind of feel. Let's say you're a day-to-day manager and you're really in it with your artist. You can usually, like, if you're talking to your artist a couple times a day, you can tell when they're starting to burn out pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, not every musician is going to be as noticeably, you know, they're not going to wear it on their sleeves as much as some of the others. But I think burnout is big. Their lack of interest in what they're usually interested in. Like, you know, if they're usually really good to, hey, I need you to go do this radio thing, or hey, I need you to hop on this podcast, or you have a press interview or whatever, and they start to just kind of say no to everything, that could be a sign of a lack of interest. What could be a sign of depression. Substance abuse is big too, because a lot of times this, you know, everyone is using substances for a different reason, but a lot of times it does come back to they're trying to numb something. Mm-hmm. So substance, like I always say, like, you got to pay attention to, you know, as much as they tell you what substances they're consuming, when they're doing it. Is it just when before they go on stage, or is this a continuous thing or whatever? And then you can just kind of I encourage people to try to observe behavior a little bit more, instead of being so like robotic and transactional with your client. Try to observe how they are today, and maybe even ask them, hey, how are you doing today? Everything good? And I think it's just a general awareness of the wellness of, you know, your client is like really, really important. And I think we get in too into transactional mode of, you know, how to break the client and, you know, what you're saying as a manager is best and all this stuff. And then you kind of forget like, all right, well, like, did you eat today? You know, like, did you drink a lot of water? Did you do a meditation? Sure. Like just trying to figure out their wellness routines too. And I think if you kind of increase your general awareness of how they are, you can usually tell.
Got it. And if you're an independent artist, I want you to have that go-to person in your life that will never hold anything against you. It's like, you know, I have a lot of clients. I said, look, you know, before you go off on the wrong person, call me up and just go, fuck. Yeah. You know, it's like, I won't just, if you've got to unload, have that person that you can unwind with, that you could just go to and say, listen, you just kind of keep an eye on me for a little bit. You know, it's like, don't, like I said, it's going to piss me off more if I have to attend a funeral than if you would have called me and said, you know what I mean? It's like, so have that person in your life. And if you don't have that person in your life, find a therapist. If you're embarrassed because you don't want anyone in your world to know what's going on, I get it. Not everybody is at that place yet, but you've got to have someone that you can talk to. You have to, some of you may prefer talking to a stranger, knowing that when you leave, it's like, they're not on your Instagram. They don't know your cousin, you know, but you've got to talk to someone. And we've always heard in the news and everything, it's like, man, I had no idea that they were going through this, or wow, I you would have never thought that they were going, everything on the outside looks so great. It's like, we don't have the ability. We're not Marvel comic heroes to be able to see what's going on inside of you. It's your responsibility to seek help. It's your responsibility to be okay not being okay. And it's your responsibility to know that this is just music. Yeah. It's like, if you need to take some time off to take care of you, we will survive. The world will go on. Right. Nothing. Some of you try to just think that I'm letting everyone down. No, I mean, I know artists that are like, I've got a crew that's I'm responsible for, and I got the band that's, no, you're responsible for you. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure that you're looking up things. There'll be links in the show notes and anything that we post on social, to your website, to your Instagram page. Daniel McCartney, thank you again for taking the time to talk about a subject that I don't think is getting talked about enough. And I'll do my part to help spread the message, you know, as I speak to other people who also have big list of independent artists. It's like, I always say, it's like, you know, it's like when record companies call and they're like, dude, we need you to fix this person after they'd already signed them. I'm like, well, I'm gonna go help all the ones that I can fix them before they get signed.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So that's what we want to do. It's like, if we can get all the independent artists in the world out there having this mindset of taking care of yourself before you get to the pressure, because trust me, you think it's hard now as an independent artist, it only gets harder and more under the microscope when you get signed. I mean, all of you, I would love a record. It's not the right thing for the wrong person. Totally. You know, it's like, totally. The record deals are great. Being at a major agency is great, but it's not the right thing for all people.
Right.
You better have the ability to lock yourself down and stay focused when that happens. And these are great resources to be able to do that.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And again, you know, anyone that joins our cause of advocacy, I'm just so thrilled and grateful to be able to spend time with them, and love what you're doing, obviously, and keep up the great work with what you guys are doing. And if you ever need anything, keep me posted.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon.
All right. Talk soon, Rick.